हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
ओके Then Bhagavad-Sandarbha Adhyayana 1, Adhikarana 2, qualifications for manifestations of the three aspects. Okay, so qualification for manifestation, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Anucheda Adhikarana Prakashita. The previous Adhikarana stated that the three aspects of absolute truth are manifested according to the qualification of the worshipper. The current Adhikarana elaborates on these qualifications that are required for realizing the manifestations of Brahman and Bhagavan. In the Anucheda 4, this is 2, okay. The qualifications required for Brahman manifestation is stated as follows. O great Lord, the greatness of one among your qualities may be realized by persons with pure hearts as Brahman, according to his realization of pure Atma, by a mind having no change, having no object of realization, since the Lord is actually beyond definition. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.6. Here Srila Jiva Goswami discusses elaborately on how the Jiva, which is infinitesimal by nature, realize the Supreme Brahman, who is beyond the comprehension of the materially contaminated minds. In the next Anucheda, the Sarup Lakshana of Brahman are described by citing the following verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. It is eternally peaceful and fearless, bestows knowledge, is pure and equal to all. Brahman, which is known as unlimited happiness and freedom from grief, is one aspect of the Supreme Lord, which words with action as their objects and words with many case relations cannot describe. Maya, being ashamed, cannot stand before the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.47. Through this verse, Srila Jiva Goswami explains that Brahman arises from Bhagavan's Sarup and is the basis for realizing Bhagavan. From this explanation, it is also proved that Brahman is a subordinate realization to the realization of Bhagavan. Hence, when Bhagavan is manifest, Brahman is manifest within it. Thus, a Sandarbha on Brahman is included within Bhagavat Sandarbha, rather than being a separate work. Next two Anuchedas focus on the qualifications required for Bhagavan manifestation. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that one can perfectly realize the absolute truth, personality of Godhead, only by the process of devotional service. And by following this path, one can enter into the kingdom of God, which is a rare privilege for the chosen few. Yes. Anucheda 4.
When it is said here that the qualification for worshipping Brahman is pure heart.
Pure heart means there's no material desire.
But it's not automatically the same thing.
No. See, that's generally when we're talking, when we say spiritual, we say transcendental, we mean devotional service. But at sometimes, then, just to make it clear, one has to distinguish between what is devotional and what is spiritual. Mm-hmm. Spiritual meaning the existence, devotional meaning the goal. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So when Mayavadis make the spiritual existence the goal, then they're impersonalists, because they don't really understand. So that position is temporary, because they're not actually engaging their nature. They're only dealing with the eternality aspect. A touch of knowledge, but not seriously a touch. So, the Ananda, and that, it, Brahman itself is happiness, so of course there's going to be some connection, but that then is said to be a fraction of a portion of a drop compared to devotional service. So that's the difficulty, is that it doesn't take one to a level that actually can give eternal satisfaction. Right? So, to bring that out, then you're bringing out that the spiritual is the platform you function on. Right? Spiritual knowledge, spiritual understanding, spiritual practice, but that is just the basis, just like you sit on the rug for the class, but it's not that sitting on the rug, that is the class. You know what I'm saying? So, but for somebody who's, let's say, sitting out in the mud, and it's cold, to sit on the rug is a goal. Yeah. Does that make sense? So that's the difference that's happening here, is that the devotees, then it's about devotional service. So it's about understanding Bhagavan. With that comes the Brahman and Paramatma features. So it's saying it's the basis of Bhagavan realization, meaning that being on the spiritual platform, situated on the spiritual platform, that's the platform on which you can appreciate Bhagavan. Right? Because if you don't have any material connection, then at that point, if the devotional attitude is there, then you can appreciate Bhagavan. But otherwise, if we have material attraction and attachment, then we're not going to realize Bhagavan, because he is a person that's beyond all that. Getting serious. Yeah. Now you look like a Baba. Right? Give the blessings. Is that? Yeah.
But now, if there is no pure heart, you cannot go to Bhagavan.
No, it means to that degree that it's pure, to that degree you can understand. See, in the material, unless you have 100%, you have nothing. Yeah. But on the spiritual, whatever percentage you have, that percentage you have. Yeah. You know, so it's different. So, therefore, the neophyte, then there is some giving, because if they have faith, that means that there's some platform, some degree that they're appreciating Krishna and his position, and their position as souls and servants. And so to that degree, they have some understanding. And that understanding, even though it may be a drop, but it's a drop of reality. Well, the material world is just an ocean of illusion. So it doesn't matter how big the material is, it doesn't compare to even a drop of spiritual. That's the whole thing. So we can say, so within devotional service, when we're pointing out strengths and weaknesses and that, then it's only so that we move forward. We don't get conditioned by the mode of goodness or some pride or some other aspect that will deviate us from getting the pure devotion. Mm-hmm. That's why it's mentioned. So that we'll keep moving forward. So we also notice what is, so we can see and differentiate between what is material and what is spiritual. Because otherwise, just like we're saying, is that in the material platform, at least especially the contemporary material platform, even maybe it's a bit archaic even. You know, I may be really off on this. So that someone, let's say, has an experience of nature, some just nice experience, just that peacefulness and that. They'll call it spiritual. Even all it was is that the mind had nothing to focus on. And then at the same time, the senses noticed the beauty around them. And so they just didn't think of all their problems for that moment. And that gave them so much relief, and it was a spiritual experience for them. When all it was is just, it was a sensual experience that took away from the standard miseries that are there because of our attachments, because there's no attachment there. Now, as soon as we become attached to that, now again the misery will start. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is that's called spiritual. generally in the contemporary context. So that would mean good qualities, somebody giving in charity, or somebody caring, or someone, you know, doing something really nice. We'll consider it, you know, kind of like a religious kind of position. If someone's religious, you know. Because the natural thing is that someone who's religious would be pious. And doing these kind of activities of sacrifice and austerity are supportive of, they are religion. But the whole point is, what's religion in support of? That's in support of the spiritual, which is in support of the transcendental. Right, so then the problem comes is that we'll take it that, okay, I'm practicing Krishna consciousness, so you know, that's the religious aspect, the practices. And so then good qualities then which are natural to use in there, because Lord Chaitanya, you know, expresses to be humble, to be tolerant, to be respectful to others like this. So then naturally then that's religious. So good qualities are religious. Right? But because we're not making the distinction between what's religion, what's philosophy, what's the transcendental, we'll take it all as one thing. Like, devotees can't really distinguish between them. You know, with training, of course, but generally not necessarily. So, therefore, good qualities are spiritual, are devotional. Right? You know, so if a religion equals spiritual and good qualities equal religion, so good qualities are spiritual. Right? That's the logic being used. But unfortunately, they are just subtle qualities, just like you use proper knowledge to do an activity. That's using the intellect. Mm-hmm. I use the proper skill. You know, that's using the body, the senses, mm-hmm. you know, properly. And then the attitude, that's also then the qualities used, that's the mental state. So body, mind, and words being engaged, you'd actually use all these. So they're just all tools. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, just like some will make the mistake that because they are, they identify with the intelligence, so they think that they can understand spiritual with their intelligence. Mm-hmm. You know, just like those that are on the emotional platform or that will think that just by proper emotions that will place you on the spiritual platform. Mm-hmm. Or those who then, you know, are very good at their activities and rituals, then the proper rituals, that makes me spiritual. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? But in all these cases, they're just mistaking the body, mind and the senses as spiritual, when they're tools to be engaged. That's why Prabhupada uses the term dovetailed, mm-hmm. right? Or in the fire of Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So, and when they're not in Krishna consciousness, then we call them so-called. Because you're using the tools, but it's not really. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Just like cooking. Yeah, you say, okay, let's say another one. Yeah, someone's following religious duties, right? And so, generally, we'll always say that's spiritual. So then, the difficulty comes up is, what if they're doing that just because people will think that they're a nice guy? Mm-hmm. And then because of that, they'll get some benefit. Mm-hmm. You know, or they're doing it because by doing all these religious things, then that will put them in a position where they'll get better material facilities. Mm-hmm. It's not really about God, it's they want the facilities. Right? So we wouldn't consider that. We'll call that so-called. Mm-hmm. Even though technically it's the same. Does that make sense? So we make a distinction, depending upon the time, place, and circumstance of our values. Then if it's getting a result that we appreciate, we'll call it real. And if it's getting a result we don't appreciate, we won't call it real. You know, it's just like, let us say, would it be a common phenomena that teenagers can have an idea that they know everything, and their kind of like experience with their friends and what they're doing, they consider that reality. And everything else is illusion. Right? But, so in those cases, adults will tell them, you have to get real. In the real world, you have to have a job, you have to be responsible, you have to deal properly with people. You can't waste money, you can't waste time. You know, you have to be careful of relationships. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of what's real. The concrete aspect is what they value. And everything else is abstract. So anything that's abstract, we will call that not real. Right? And anything that of the abstract that gives us a concrete experience that we appreciate, you know, we all appreciate or at least identify with. You know, like some people identify with being miserable. So the material world is a miserable place, and so they expect it to be. So it's a value for them. You know, maybe not positive. And so then that's the concrete. Does that make sense? So the whole point is that in establishing this, when we start to value Krishna consciousness, that becomes the concrete. And then the material world starts to be not quite as important. But in the beginning, we can't distinguish between the internal, external, primary, and secondary, so we just take it all together. You know, so therefore, if you're doing Hare Krishna stuff, then you're Hare Krishna, you're advancing, which is true. But at the same time, then they're not distinguishing, it's the devotion that makes it work, and the Hare Krishna stuff is just the best tools. Why use inferior tools when better ones are available? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, why use a shoe when there's a hammer? You know, or why use a shoe when you have a glass? You know, like that, you know. Unless it's a stiletto, then that's another thing. But. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, but with time you start to see what is actually the thing, and then you're more committed to it. Because the one you're committed because it's all Krishna consciousness. But now if you have some difficulty performing the external activities of devotional service, the secondary, the religious aspects, then we'll start to replace them with our previous samskaras. Because let's say if someone says, no, being nice to everybody is important, and unless we have that, we can't really have devotional service. They were thinking that before they joined Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. You know, they wouldn't, it means you wouldn't go to that if that wasn't what you did. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, that's the thing. But it doesn't mean that someone, let's say, who was rough and ready and didn't care about people, by being fixed in Krishna consciousness, they'll become nice. Mm-hmm. But the value is Krishna consciousness, not the good quality. Mm-hmm. It just comes as a side effect. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like when you, how you say, you know, get your, what do you call it, your palm fit, you also get something on the side to eat with it, no? Right. You put it in something, right? You know, just eat it straight. No? Yeah. So it's just, it comes on the side. It's not the main thing. You know? You want some fries and I give you some ketchup or some mayonnaise or whatever it is that people are eating with it. And that's all and no chips. Then people are going to say, what? Where's the substance here? So it goes along with. So, that means with time you can start to see. And now when you see that, then you're convinced that the recommended activities of devotional service, they're the actual best religious processes to use. Right? Because these other ones are lesser. Right? One is they're lesser in quality, and also they're lesser in consciousness. If you're using pranamoy religious elements, they're lesser in quality than manamoy. And the devotees, the practical thing is you're supposed to use the manamoy stuff at the level of Vijnanamaya. Right? That's supposed to, because we're not the body, we're the soul, we're servant of Krishna, and so we're using the religious principles to serve Krishna to come to Anandamaya. But if we fall back to using our pranamaya religious kind of sentiments, then it means they're better than anamoy. You can say yes, but they're not as good as manamoy. That's that. They just don't, you know, I say. In English we say don't cut the mustard. What that means, I have no idea. It just means it's not up the scratch, it's not up the snuff. It just goes on and on. It's not the standard. You know, it's less than standard.
if we spoke about the experience, that's the concrete.
Yes.
So it means that people actually stay, or at least become attracted to Krishna consciousness and stay when they get this experience.
Exactly.
So it means that we either help them with the experience, or Krishna helps them, because we cannot impose our experience on them.
No, it's by association. That's why association is so important, because if you're in association of someone who's having that experience, then you're close. Then you can, you know, if you're aware, you can see. Mm. Right? You know, you're interested, then Krishna will show you. Like that. So it's a combination. Which means Krishna is the guru, but the devotees, then they are representing Krishna. You know, because if the devotees like kirtan, they like the experience, others then will take it seriously. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like this. Let's say you go in, you sit down, and everybody's just absorbed in the kirtan. Mm-hmm. You know, so then you would tend to think, okay, that's the thing to do. You know? And so then you try to get into whatever they're doing. They're clapping their hands, they're singing, they're closing their eyes, or whatever it is that they're doing. You'll try to do that. Dancing might be a little bit wild at this moment, but, you know, you're going to do. But if you look around and everybody's on their phone, then you got a phone, you got things to look at, so then you'll do what they do. So that's the thing, is association. You take on the qualities of those you associate with. So that's the whole point. So now if we say, okay, they're Westerners, and so therefore we should give them a Western experience, right? Whatever that means. You know, so in other words, Western experiences means what I value on the mundane platform. Like that. Then the difficulty comes down is that, how is that, even if it is the same as what they all have, what's the difference? They're sitting at their home. They're having their own experience. But it's not satisfying. They're looking for something spiritual. Right? That's why they come in contact with devotees, or they come to the temple, or come to a program, or something. And so, if it's exactly the same as being at home, why did they have to, make all the trouble to go to the program? They could have stayed at home. Yeah, and that's very popular these days. Stay at home, order out for food, everything comes to home. You want anything, you order it online, you don't have to leave your house. The only problem is you have to leave your house to make money. But unless you can do that at home, then you just never leave, right? And then it's one of those, 2 weeks after you're dead, someone figures out that, it's something strange about the house, and then the police come, and then it's like that. Yeah, funny smell. Like that. Yeah. So then what have you added to their life? People, it's just like, people spend money to get an experience. And do they want the experience that they're getting sitting in their home? Right? Does that make sense? It's just like, if you want the same cooking that you have at home, you would stay at home. You know? So you go out to a restaurant because either one, it's easier, but then you would go to a fast food place if it's only ease. You know, and then, even then, they'll deliver to your house. So, that's why, how you say, pizza delivery boys are there, right? So, you go for the particular experience it has, and it's different. Right? You go to a Mexican, it's different. You go to Italian, it's different. You go to French, it's different. Or Lebanese, it's different. You know? It's like that. You even see now Ethiopian, this, that. You name it, it's there. You know? So before they just got a job, now they open a restaurant. Right? You know? So, yeah. So that's the whole idea, is that you're going out for an experience. So if we don't give them a Krishna conscious experience, a Vedic experience, then what's the point? And if they say, oh, they'll feel uncomfortable, that means, does someone feel uncomfortable, let's say, going to a restaurant, okay? And in the restaurant, the people working in the restaurant have a uniform, right? You consider it nice, it's part of the experience, right? But in the contemporary theories, this, oh, now because you're at that restaurant, now you're subtly telling everybody there that they have to dress like you. Where do these ideas come from? Right? Because it's not like that. You know, let's say I go and watch, you know, how you say that Edinburgh, how you say, you know, Scottish marching band. Does that mean I have to show up in a kilt? You know, you can if you want, or like that, you know. I mean, he's looking good there. You know? So no, you go for the experience. Or, you know, there's a Japanese drum ensemble. It's not that everybody has to, you know, show up with one of those things on their head and their katana. You know what I'm saying? No, you go for the experience. So if you come to the temple and you have this Hare Krishna experience and it's all different, you know, you come in, everyone's sitting on the floor, that's different, you know? And then if you have some class, you put down something nice to sit on, you know, like that. You know, you have nice incense, you have these far out pictures that nobody has, you know, the music is different, the instruments are different, people are doing all these far out rituals and there's flowers and, it, you know, it's just a total, you know, immersion. And from that, you get an experience. Like that. But if you just go and it looks like your living room, and like that, and hey, we're going to chant, and like, maybe it'll be cool. But at the same time, it's just like, we're sitting here and we're talking about performing our duties. Does our duties have anything to do with what other people are doing? People who are not doing what we're doing, does that matter for us doing what we're doing? No. It's just like, let's say, for example, we're sitting here, and between our front gate and the ghat where you get on the boats, like that, there'll be, I think it's 11 or 13 different mutts that are there that are not ISKCON. Right? So, now, we sit here, we do our service, and they are there and they do their service. So we don't worry about them, they don't worry about us. Right? And everybody's happy. Now let's say someone from this mutt, you know, gets disgruntled or whatever it is and goes to one of those mutts. Why is he at that mutt? Because that mutt is fabulous? No, it's because we're not good. And so all they are doing is thinking about us in the negative. You know, like Kamsa thinks about Krishna or something. You know? So, you know, I mean, they must get some something benefit from thinking about ISKCON all day and how like this and that. You know, but their position is based on not doing what we do, rather than doing what they're doing. You know, the same way as we take up these modern things, their position is based on not doing what the general ISKCON does, or what Prabhupada established. It's, you know, being, you know, up to there, being Western, being mid, you know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, it's not a positive thing. So the idea is that you should be able to split what's what. So we know it's the secondary is not the main, but of secondary, why wouldn't you pick the best? You know, and if you can't pick the best because of attachment, that's fine also. But then you have to recognize it's attachment, not it's better. You know, this whole thing, I'm being honest. Honest what? Who's being honest? The soul is being honest. Are they the body? No. So these kind of values, and that, yes, you can use them, but you have to be honest and use them, that you have these attachments, you have these distractions, see how they can connect to Krishna, and then use them. Is that something? Then it starts to have meaning. So the distinction is made, therefore, as we see we go, before we don't make so much distinction, because for many, if you, it's like Prabhupada would say, we're Vaishnava by philosophy, Hindu by religion. Like that. But probably most devotees don't know that. They can't understand what that is, because what we do, it's in the Vedas. Hindu means one who follows the, on the other side, the Sindh River, who follows the Vedas. So it's the same thing. You know, because devotees say, oh, we're not Hindus. We're not Hindus by philosophy, but by religion, we're the same. And since they're only into the religion, not the philosophy, then they're cool. You know, they don't mind. You know, so sometimes devotees get in trouble. We're not Hindus, like that, and then it makes the Hindus upset. But we're following the same thing, same books, same everything. But we're doing it for devotion, while generally they're doing it for piety, to just have good material life. You know, some are, you know, impersonalists and like this. So, to be able to distinguish between the philosophy and the religion. To be able to distinguish between what's the primary and secondary. You know? Like that. You know, what's devotion, what's not. And so then, you're naturally, if it's about pleasing Krishna, you're going to want to use the best facilities you can. And if it's a matter of what's favorable to Krishna, then you'll look at what's recommended and use that. We're looking at what's favorable for ourselves, and that's where we start from, then that will be very weak. If we're looking at how to please Krishna, these are the options, and within that, I'm comfortable with this one, that's strong. Because then it's about pleasing Krishna. The other ones, you're starting with yourself, and then wherever Krishna fits in, you do, and where he doesn't, he doesn't. And so that's going to be a very weak position. But better than not being devotional at all. But at the same time, as if you preach that is a advanced position, now it's creating trouble. Then it's a disturbance in society, like Rupa Goswami says. Yeah.
When we teach to Indian students in our country, we usually tell, yes, we heard about Krishna from our grandmother, but it's too much better. Now we should be focused on our studying and our career. And when we will be old, then we will think about Krishna. And I want to ask about reason. Is it because, like, a second generation of his father, they have a less anatta, and why more focused on material.
So you're talking about second generation, or you're talking about the Hindus?
I'm asking, I want to understand
if there's a connection
between second generation of the sport, who recently reported that they have less anatta, and
right,
why they can look more mundane. And my question is, the reason of this type of thinking of Indian students, it seems like second generation of ISKCON, or is it because they piety is the obstacle for that?
See, the point is that just they're not very mature. Right? Means, okay. Then you're saying, okay, Krishna's for later, when we get old. So now we should concentrate on our studies. And then you look at it and go, okay, that's nice. It means being a student, it's naturally good that you are focusing on your studies and that. But why are you a student? Why are you focusing on these studies? You just ask them that straight. Oh, it says, well, because we can get a degree like this. And why do you want a degree? You know, and the degree is not now. Why you're mentioning this now? The degree is after 4 years or 5 years or 3 years, whatever it is that they're doing. No, but then we can, you know, get a job and all that. Why do you want a job? Oh, you want to get money. So that's even farther down the line. You know? And then what are you going to do with this money? You're going to maintain a family. You're going to get a house. You're going to get... These are farther and farther. So if they're considering all that except Krishna... You know, and also they'll be considering getting lots of money now so they can put it away so when they're old, they don't have to work and all that. They'll consider all that right now. If they're a good student. If they're just partying and all that and being crazy, then they're not considering anything. Then, you know, but if they are, then why is it everything but Krishna? Right? And the whole thing is what's more important, the degree or the family? Right? Or the job or the family, or the money or the family. Right? And so the farther down it is, the more value it is. That's why you're working now for something after 5-10 years. So the point is the relationship with God is the most important, because it's on the platform of the soul. Because you're going to die, and that family and all your money and everything else will be gone. But you'll remain, and God will remain. So wouldn't that relationship be considered important? Right? And so, therefore, why you're not considering that in the whole thing? Otherwise, then it's not a matter of, oh, no, that's later and this and that. It's just your intelligence is not broad enough, not deep enough. You don't think that far ahead. Does that make sense?
I have some devoted talks in Karakanda, and they are known to them. And the Indian girls want to marry with them. And these girls ask me.
They want a marriage with?
These local Kazakhstan girls.
Okay.
And Indian students who have some interest in Krishna consciousness, but not fully devoted. And the
girls are devotees.
Girls devotees, yes. These girls ask me, are the students just 5% or they have some bhakti?
You'd have to see, is that they're probably some pious, but the whole thing is it's just a matter of, you know, what is their character? What's their culture? How do they live their life? Because it's not going to be any different than that. It's not that because they're a devotee, everything will be wonderful. Marriage, you're dealing with straight up front, what's the character of the individual? So if the person's rough, they're going to be rough. Not because they're a devotee, they won't be rough. Yeah, give them 10, 20 years, then they may not be rough.
Esteemed young people, they have good qualities, better than qualities of our people. But now we thought that good qualities is the secondary point and the...
Devotionals, yes, but the point is marriage is about the secondary aspect. So you just have to see if the character, but the point is then they have to be willing to live whatever that culture is that they have. So when they go visit the parents and all that, then they're going to be touching grandparents' feet and, you know, cooking and doing all kinds of stuff like that. As whatever the girls are doing, in other words, that guy, whatever his sister's doing, that's what they'll be doing. So if they're cool with that, you know, like that, and they're comfortable with her being a devotee, then it'll work. You know, better, they're more advanced, but... But you also have to see is, are they doing it to get a Kazakh passport? You know, and if that's there, don't even bother. If they're from the city, is the boy from the city? If he's from a village, don't marry him. City girls should not marry village boys. That's just the way it is. You know, like you have these Western girls come from the West, they're from the city, and they try to marry these local Bengali boys. It's not going to happen. You know, I mean, it's not going to work. It'll happen, but it won't work. You know what I'm saying? You have to see the equalness of nature. So if they're city people, they're sophisticated, and they are matches. No? Okay. Anucheta 4. The first line, Viranti Tat Tat Va Vidaha, will be discussed in detail in Paramatma Sandarbha. In explaining the qualification for the three aspects of one tattva to manifest, the qualification for realizing a Brahman is first described. O great Lord, the greatness of one among your qualities may be realized with persons with pure hearts as Brahman, according to his realization of pure Atma by a mind having no change, having no object of realization, since the Lord is actually beyond definition. Right? So there's no object meaning within the material. They have no material desires. There's nothing on the material platform that they're looking for, and they're not trying to compare to anything on the material platform.
And mind having no change means steady mind?
Yes, steady. Yes. Like steady. And why would it change? Because of material desire. So that's where we're getting the having no change. Means if you change because there's desire. Like that. When there's no desire, there's no change. Right? But it's also qualified for Brahman realization because they have no object of realization. The Lord is beyond, but they're not meditating on anything material, but they're not also meditating on anything spiritual. I mean spirit itself, but not on any, you know, form or activity or quality or anything like that. So that's why you're saying qualifications for a Brahman, that's all they get.
Yeah.
We, in understanding Bhagavan, he includes the Paramatma and Brahman aspects, so we get those realizations along with the Bhagavan realization.
Yeah.
So they just come as, you know, how do you say, the side? Yeah, what do you call it? How do you say hors d'oeuvre? Hors d'oeuvre? Yeah, means all the side things. Yes, like that. You know, it's just the side stuff. It just comes along with it.
When you say about creation of Brahma, it's so new for Brahma body.
Yes, the Brahma body. Like that. Because, but at the same time, it's not that this doesn't apply to the devotee. Because the devotee means here, pure hearts as Brahma. How does the heart become pure? By remembering Krishna, then one becomes purified inside and outside. Right? According to realization of the pure Atma, he sees himself as the servant of Krishna. That's a pure Atma. Right? The actual pure. Mind having no change, he's always fixed in Krishna consciousness. Having no object of realization, there's nothing on the material platform they want. They're not interested in facility here, the heavenly planets, you know, liberation, anything like that. Right? So then, and they're always absorbed in the Lord, who is beyond definition. So, they're situated on this Brahman platform,
mm-hmm.
but they will realize the Supreme Brahman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? So in other words, it's the platform for dealing with Krishna. For the others, it's a goal.
Yeah.
So that's the difference between the Jnanis and the Shanta Bhaktas. Mm-hmm. For the Jnanis, that Brahman situation is the goal.
Yeah.
While for the Shanta Bhaktas, that's just the platform of which they appreciate Krishna, the, you know, Supreme Person. Yes.
That's the difference between Brahma Bhuta and Mukti.
Brahma Bhuta and Mukti, yes. Okay, very nice. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the same thing devotees are using, but they're just taking it through. That's why you'll see Prabhupada, the uniqueness in his explanation is that at every point he'll always point out how it connects to Krishna.
Yes, yes.
Right? And because it always connects to Krishna, and that we may not see the detail. The acharyas will talk the detail and bring it up to talk about Krishna. That's why we put in the, you know, these Adhikarana Prakashikas and that, because a lot of times it may take many, many points before they bring it around. Sometimes they do it immediately, and sometimes they go through some technical things. It's very rare Prabhupada does that. I think we had, remember there was one purport? I can't remember. It was quite many years ago. That it was very long purport, and there was a lot of discussion before Prabhupada gave the conclusion how it connected to Krishna. Because generally you don't see like that. At every point, Prabhupada's connected.
Mm-hmm.
Like
that. Maharaj, it seems that in Kali Yuga it's very difficult to get the Brahman and Paramatma realization.
It is.
In other age, it was more common.
It was common, so it means that would be more common. In other words, they know Bhagavan, but they would just basically see Bhagavan as Paramatma. They understand the person, but they would generally see Paramatma on down. So they'd be situated on the one, and it might have the Paramatma, so there'll be some appreciation like that. Or they might just be interested in Brahman, and he's the Supreme Brahman, but they don't want to establish a relationship.
Yes.
So those things are quite easy. In the Kali Yuga, these are not easy because it requires religion.
Yes, yes.
The others, people were religious, they could follow these things. In this age, they're not so religious. I mean, there's a little inclination, but it's not necessarily directed properly.
Yes.
Right? Then you have the how do you say? Then you have, but by Bhagavan, it includes the other two. Right? So that's why it's so special, is how Lord Chaitanya is starting with the top, and with that, he's making it work. Does that make sense? While others generally go up through the process. Like that, and then they get to there. So here it's that, by cultivating that relationship with Krishna on the Bhagavan platform, the other two are automatically coming along with it. So the more you realize Bhagavan, the more the Brahman and Paramatma become clear.
Mm-hmm.
See, because if it's not clear, we get distracted by the impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. Or just, you know, the aspect that he's God. Mm-hmm. But the point is you want to be able to appreciate he being a person, therefore that's means there is no such thing as impersonal and that's all there is. It doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. It's the person who is pervading everything. But he's doing it in his impersonal feature. Mm-hmm. But it's the person who's doing it. Just like the man is sitting in his office and he's running his big, you know, company. But from his office, he's getting it done. He's talking to people, he's getting things, he's telling them what to do, and they go out and do it. So he is present all the way at the outer edges of his concern. But he doesn't personally have to do it. His energy is there. So the same way, it's the person who has expanded as Brahman, and the material world is situated on that. But it's he's done that. Right. So, in other words, if he didn't have the quality of existence, then how would the material energy be able to sit on Brahman? Right. Does that make sense? He has that. And also, then the aspect is God's not the primary feature. It means his medium-sized form. That is the original. Right? So that means Braja Krishna, he's the original. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, and for the Vaikuntha Wallas, they'll take it back to Mahanarayan. At least they'll get back to there. That is beyond just the aspect that he's, you know, manifesting the God aspects. He does all the God aspects and other in Vaikuntha and in Sapurusha avatars. But he's still God. You know, but there is that thing of just being a slight bit separated from that. You know, you don't get the fullness of it because it's in majesty, so it's always going to remain. But when you add the full sweetness of Braj, then that goes away. Mm-hmm. That's theirs. That Braja Krishna, that's the original. Mm-hmm. And him and his pastimes with associates, that's the original. And all these others are expanding from there. Mm-hmm. Right, so if you have devotional service, then you have all the things of the rules and regulations, you have all the techniques and knowledge, you have all that's there, if it's useful. And if it's not useful, why would you be involved? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like if you have a degree and it gets you the job and you make the money, you'll call the degree useful. If you have the degree, no one will give you a job, you can't make money from it, will you consider it a value? No, you'll say it's a waste of time. So that's the whole point, is that anything that you can properly connect to Krishna, then it's valuable. And if it doesn't connect, it's not of value. And at any moment, just what is to be applied, that's what you use. Does that make sense? You know, like we're sitting, just like let's say you have a nice car and you can use it to drive to the temple or pick up boga for the temple, or take the devotees out on Harinam and all that. But if you're sitting in the temple class, is it important? Is it a value? No. So therefore, you're not using it. But if you're attached, then you'll be sitting in your van out on the street, listening to class over the radio. You know, because you just have to be in your van. You know, it's just like such a great van. Does that make sense? Yeah.
When we preach, we directly preach on the Bhagavan aspect, that is Krishna. And people have an appreciation for that. So then, the Brahman and the Paramatma aspects, if they do not appreciate or have a less understanding about it, so shall we not get into the picture if they have appreciation directly for the Bhagavan?
But does it matter if they're appreciating Bhagavan? What does it matter if they're not appreciating Paramatma and Brahman at this point? You're engaging him that way, then what's the need? Because these things come up anyway. I mean, constantly in any of the prayers, any of the things, they're always mentioning these two platforms. Mm-hmm. So you can always bring it out and you see if it works, then nice. And if not, then you don't worry so much about it. The point is, when you have Bhagavan, Brahman and Paramatma come along with it. O Lord, with unlimited qualities in your Surup, Bhuman, though it is difficult to understand Brahman and Bhagavan, it is possible for persons with pure Antakarana, Amalan Taratma Bihi, to understand the greatness of the Lord, Mahima, or his Brahman nature, which does not manifest the qualities of the Surup, Agunasya. Shruti says, Ata Kasmad Uchite Brahma Brimhati Brimhayati Cha. Brahman is great and gives greatness to others. Shira Upanishad. So then the doubt. Shamsha, what is the cause and means of realization of Brahman? Utra, one can realize Brahman by realizing one's nature as pure Atma. Tvam, footnote 2, Vriti. Beside the jiva, there is no other consciousness in the material world. Based on this experience, therefore, the jiva is instructed to extrapolate from his experience of self-consciousness to get some idea of the nature of Brahman. This is explained by Srila Jiva Goswami by using the analogy of the sun rays and the sun. For a person who has no knowledge of that of what a sun globe is, the sun rays serve as a medium to understand it because the sun rays, which are an amsha of the sun, are of the same nature as the sun. Tattva Sandarbha, Anucheda 52, Shri Jiva Toshayi.
That is what I'm
doing. Huh?
This is the correct one.
Oh, because it said Toshani, it's Toshayi.
Toshayi.
Okay. Okay, so you'll change all those.
Yeah, I always.
Okay. Yeah, then it makes more sense. Okay. Toshayi. Yes, so, in other words, one seeing one's own nature and trying to separate the nature of the jiva from the external situation that you're in. Mm-hmm. And from that, then you can understand transcendental and material. Then from that, then you go on to understand Brahman. Mm-hmm. So they're taking that. So, because you're going from your own experience and you have to find something that they can relate it to. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So then they can have some understanding by that method. Mm-hmm. So for many, then this would be an ascending method. But they'll get up to the Brahman. So they're only qualified for that because they're doing that. Now, if you're using a descending method from... It means that the Vedics always has some aspect of descending. Mm-hmm. But where we're talking about proper descending means it's coming down through the parampara, meaning the chit potency is there. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, let's say you're coming in the Shankara line, you could say as you're hearing the acharyas and commentaries and this and that, so it's descending, the teacher's teaching you. Mm-hmm. But because there's no chit potency, basically they'll take that knowledge and with it try to ascend with that. Mm-hmm. While the Vaishnavs, then, we're hearing from authority that chit potency is there. That's what's making it work. So one's going to go beyond just the one's own experience and then trying to, what is it, extrapolate. And what exactly does extrapolate mean?
Whatever you have, based on that, you predict about something.
Okay. Yeah, because the academics always like to use that term. Anytime you're talking about God, it's extrapolation. Right? They're talking about their ideas, and it's not. It's pure knowledge. Right? strange, but true. Okay, so that's the whole thing. That's the process they use is this extrapolation. They're going to take their own experience and from that try to project it onto other things. But when you're doing that in line with the chit potency, then that connection and Krishna reveals himself. So you've started something, you've tried to go towards Krishna, and then Krishna comes towards you. You take one step, he'll take 10. Mm-hmm. But if there's no chit potency, then you take one step, and then you have to take another step. And then, you have to take 11 steps to get what you would get by the Vaishnavas, one step. No? Because 1 and 10? Yeah. Yes.
When we talk with the followers of Shankara,
why they care about the chit potency? What I'm saying is, does that make sense? You know, it's like...
In my lessons, I have many students from media for followers of this line. And when we discuss with them, they usually, they seem to be the one that is our
Is? Yes, Vedic. Maybe it means it's in line in the Vedic, and all that, and based on Vedic Pramana, and that is coming down from Shankara, you know, like that. Where did Shankara get it from? Right? So if he's getting it from Vyas, then you have to take Vyasa's angle. Like that. And so Srimad Bhagavatam, we see the, you know, what Vyasa is understanding. So that's the angle that we're taking. But the point is the chit potency means that God himself is revealing, because according to their philosophy, then this whole process of them understanding and that is all under the, you know, vidya and avidya potencies, which are not Brahman. So then how will that get them to Brahman? So we're hearing from Brahman. We're getting that potency from Brahman. Because their thing is potency is not connected to Brahman. So why are they using potency? Because how will that get them to Brahman? Can't use something that's not going to, you know what I'm saying? You take a train that's going to the place you want. You know, you don't, go next door and buy an ice cream and that will get you to, you know, London or something. That would be great. But, you know, just get your ice cream, sit down, eat. When you're finished, when you walk outside, you'll be in Piccadilly Circus or something. You know, that would be cool. Right?
Always,
right.
If you do that.
Huh?
Always, if you eat ice cream, you end up in Piccadilly Circus or something.
It probably depends upon which shop you went to or what flavor you got. You know, if you want to go to Piccadilly, that. If you want to go to Regent Park, then you get the other one. You know.
Read carefully.
Huh?
The ingredients.
Yeah, so like that. I'm sure that they can tell you and all that. You know, so therefore you say, I want to go to, you know, how you say, you know, Oxford. So what would you recommend? I go with a chocolate sundae. You know, so then that will get you there. You know, but if you want to go to Cambridge, they might want to go with a banana split or something. Yeah.
Contradictional nature to Krishna, we can understand not by intelligence but only by workers of bhakti. And they sometimes say that contradiction, how avidya appears, we can't understand by intelligence, we can understand by the meditation and Brahma.
Okay. It means by meditation on Brahman, but the point is they have to connect to Brahman to do it. Right? But the problem is they're using just the mind and intelligence. Those are material. Those are created by avidya, according to their philosophy. If you're using the mind in meditation, how will that give a transcendental position? Right? Because there's no potency of Brahman. So how is that going to come through their mind? Because Brahman's not going to be in the mind. Because the mind is material and Brahman is beyond. Does that make sense? So they're not their system. How is that actually going to work? So the point is that by the devotional process, then Brahman reveals himself. Because the point is why would we who are in illusion, what's the advantage? Why would Brahman want to need to reveal themselves? And if you're saying Brahman reveals himself, then that means that Brahman has personality and has will and all those things. And they're saying there isn't anything. So why do you care? You know, it's like if you have no idea, you say you have a cart and you're moving along with a cart. And you're unaware, you know, you don't care. Anything, something falls on the cart, you just keep going. You don't care. So why would Brahman care to reveal themselves through meditation? You know, what's causing that? So that means that Brahman must be a conscious entity that has will, has you know, that awareness. Because to be conscious means you're conscious of things. Just to be conscious that's like that, then what's the point of that? So, yeah. Okay. Purva Paksha. Realization. So now, again, further doubt. Realization is a function of the antakarana. Since it is subject to the changes of the gross and subtle body, how can it understand an object with no change, Atma or Brahman, Utra? This antakarana has given up all changes, avikriyat. Srila Prabhupada explains the difference between the two kinds of antakarana, pure and polluted, in the following.
Antakarana in this context is the subtle life.
Yes. Yes. Krishna consciousness means pure consciousness, just like water. When it falls down from the cloud, it is pure. And as soon as it drops or mixes with the muddy earth, it becomes muddy. It is not more clear. Similarly, we as spirit soul, our consciousness is as pure as Krishna is pure. And Krishna consciousness means that, quote, I am eternal servant of Krishna, end quote. That is Krishna consciousness. Gradually, as we contact the material contamination, we become different conscious. Just like we are sitting, so many ladies and gentlemen here, some of us thinking that, quote, I am American. Some of them are thinking that we are Indian. Some of them are thinking German or this or that. I am Hindu. I am Muslim. I am Christian. I am white. I am black. In so many ways, we are. Our consciousness are polluted. Actually, my position is, as it is said in the Vedic literature, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, or spirit soul. Now I am identifying not with Brahman, but I am identifying with his body. I am American, I am Englishman, I am Indian. Because by accident I have gotten this Indian body, I may think, I am Indian. You may have American body, you may think, I am. But we are neither American nor Indian. We are pure spirit soul. This is only an outward dress. Suppose you have green dress. You don't say, I am green dress. You say, I am Mr. John. Similarly, if we say that I am American, I am Indian, that is not my real identification. Exactly like that, if someone says that I am Mr. Green Dress, I am Mr. White Dress, as that is not identification. Similarly, if I say I am American, or I am Indian, or Englishman, or so many Hindus or Muslims, this is not my pure identification. My pure identification is that I am eternal servant of Krishna, of God. That's all. That is pure identification. When one comes to this understanding that I am eternal servant of God, that is called Brahma-Bhuta stage. Aham Brahmasmi. Pandal Lecture, Bombay, April 11, 1971. Purva Paksha. One realizes objects, but the pure Atma, Tvam, is not the object of any realization, since it is internal. Okay. Right, because you can realize objects, so the soul is internal, so it's not an object. So how can you realize? But then why are they making the endeavor? You know, that's the fun. Uttara. This realization is devoid of having an object of realization. Aru pataha. Since the realization is devoid of an object caused by absorption in the gross and subtle bodies, the pure Atma, Tvam, manifests itself. Riti. The following excerpt from Jiva Dharma throws light on this subject. Mula Sahib. Is it not better to meditate in the mind upon the Supreme Being rather than to model a form from the inert material elements? Gaurachanda Babaji. Both are the same. The mind, albeit a subtle material element, is still a part of the mundane nature. Because they're saying, no, but you have to do it in the mind. But the mind's still material. It's subtler. The thoughts of the materially engrossed mind are always contaminated by matter. Thus, every product of the mind is inert. For example, when we pronounce Brahman is all-pervasive, does this indicate that we are actually able to fathom completely this quality of Brahman's ubiquity? Ubiquity means? Okay. I think not. The conditioned mind recoils from the infinite all-pervasiveness of transcendental Brahman and grasps at the closest material comparison of our experience. Right? So it's always going to do, we'll try to put it to our experience, what it's like. You know, like we say, oh, it was just like if I was, you know, in this kind of situation, or yes, I was in that kind of thing, and you're always going to compare it.
It's all pervading.
Hmm?
All pervading.
All pervading.
Omnipresence.
from the presence. Okay. What is that? Ubiquity.
Ubiquity.
Ubiquity. Ubiquity.
Ubiquity.
Yeah, yeah, ubiquity. Ubiquity. Is this a French one or no? Okay.
We're learning English
along the way. Yeah, that we learn later. Yeah, especially as it gets more technical, somehow or other using bigger words are all coming up. Okay. The vast yet yet still limited material sky, we're going to grasp with that and say is unlimited like the sky, because we're going to take something that's within our context of our experience. Again, if an ordinary person would say, I am meditating upon Brahman, his perception of Brahman will inevitably be limited by time and space, both mundane conditions. If the meditating mind cannot break the bonds of material time and space and reach beyond them, how can it perceive transcendence? So all the things that you're working with is still mundane, so how will they go beyond? If the meditating mind... Okay. By rejecting a deity formed of the gross elements such as earth or water, and then creating a mental image of Ishwara, we still find that we are worshipping an image of Ishwara composed of the material elements. Therefore, both these forms of worship, internal or external, involve the material elements. Ultimately, no material element can act as a vehicle to bring it... Okay. Oh, it's just continuing. Okay. Ultimately, no material element can act as a vehicle to bring us into contact with the transcendental platform. The one indispensable element is bhava, faith and devotional feeling for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such bhava resides only within the spirit soul, the jiva, right? So the soul can perceive because they have devotion. So devotion resides in the soul, not in the mind, intelligence, and all that. Right? So that's an interesting, you know. So in a sense, yeah.
So Matt, if the soul resides in, not in the mind, please. So it means that our conditioned mind, politic mind, cannot actually hinder our devotion. But it does.
Because we identify with it.
And who identifies with it?
The soul.
Identifies with the mind.
The soul identifies with the mind, with the body. That's what Prabhupada was talking about. All these, I say I'm this, I'm that, I'm all these things, because the soul is identifying. But the soul is beyond that. That's what he's saying. It's a humble muscle. We're transcendence. And we're the same quality like the Lord, just he's unlimited and we're limited. So the point is when the soul, appreciating the understanding of Godhead, from the bona fide source, then that chit potency awakens within them their actual appreciation and understanding of the Lord. So the Lord reveals within the soul, not within the mind and that. We may experience, but it's within the soul. So that's the thing that's happening in the soul. So you can use the external things as instruments. You know, it's just like you're cooking. You're using the external instruments and the knowledge and the skills, the senses, the mind, thinking, oh, should I put this? No, we put that yesterday. Why don't we do like this? You know, all those kind of things you're using. But it's the bhakti within the soul that then gives it that transcendental position. Okay. So that's another interesting. Yes.
I think elsewhere it's mentioned that the purified mind can actually reflect what's in the soul, but when it's contaminated, it reflects metta.
Yes.
So then.
Yeah. So as we get purified, you can start to reflect. Yeah. You know, just like I can't remember who was talking about it. One of the acharyas is talking about that at any time you can access the spiritual intelligence, because we hear, you know, you should remember Krishna. Not so at any time you can use it. But we tend by conditioning to not use it, and we'll use the material intelligence in mind.
Just it seems to be more accessible.
Because it's just we're used to it. You know? And that's just like something that we're familiar with, even though it may be more difficult, we'll consider it easier than something that maybe actually, factually, is time or effort easier, but we're unfamiliar with. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, so that's then what happens. That's the conditioning. That's why we want to give up these identities. You know that, okay, that's the kind of background, so it's going to have that kind of effect, so then I can work in that kind of way. You know? Does that make sense? So, you know, like say, okay, I'm American. So then, okay, so if we're looking at Americans, then Americans, what are they? They're people from somewhere else that then came and whatever's practical, they just use it. They don't have an attachment to necessarily any kind of tradition. They're just attached to what works. Right? So if that's the position, then is it American to say we're American and so we can't adjust with anything non-American? That's a totally non-American perspective. You know, so what do you mean? Americans drop whatever they're doing at the, you know, immediately if something's better. Like that, you know, who cares about the tradition? You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, if the Vedic system is more effective, why wouldn't they use it? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like that. So then to say, oh, we can't do these things, that's not American. You know?
Yeah,
you know, try Baja or something, you know, but it's not American. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's just a matter of knowing what it is. Oh, that'll be easy. So therefore, to take up, that'll be easy as that. You know? And then someone else has another nature, you know, that they're good in another area. And so then they can work in that and do that for Krishna. You just know what you have and use it. But to identify with it, then that's foolish. That's never advantageous. You know? So, such bhava resides only within the spirit soul, the jiva. Hearing and chanting Hari Nam and the pastimes of the Supreme Lord and worshipping His deity form provide the jiva with an inspiration to be steady in devotional practice and thus strengthen his bhava. Eventually, that's what we mean by religion. Religion then strengthens, it means that's used as a support for, dharma is used as a support for sad-dharma. So if dharma is used for sad-dharma, it's also called sad-dharma. You know, just like varnashram used for devotional service is called daiva varnashram. Okay. Eventually, this practice ascends to true shuddha bhakti. At this point, the pure spiritual form of the Supreme Lord is revealed to the sadhaka. So he doesn't have to go through other mediums. He sees directly the Lord. And at the same time as then he sees that those mediums are also directly the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So for the neophyte, the deity is representing the Lord. But you see, those who are realized and see the Lord know the deity is non-different from the Lord. Does that make sense? Yeah. Therefore, through this process of pure devotional service, the transcendental form of the Lord is revealed, an impossible task for the methods of karma and jnana. Jivadharma, chapter 11. And this, therefore, we can conclude.
We are giving conclusion so that the whole, how it is connected to the point we are discussing.
Well, okay. No, but then you should put something there, okay, that it's us, like Vriti or something. And at the top, we can put that other, you know, the commentary. It means whatever's going to be our... Did you talk about it in there?
Yeah.
Well, okay, yeah. Then you just put the same, you put whatever the hell, and then the following excerpt from Jivadharma, you have that, but then this point you just put Vriti. Vriti, therefore we can conclude that the realization of the pure Atma or Brahman by the process of pure devotional service is independent of any mundane conceptions or goals. And hence this realization doesn't require any mundane object, gross or subtle, for its manifestation. So that's the meaning of no material object. You know, so there's no object of the mind. That means material. Mm-hmm. So it's about spiritual. That's why then we use those things that are said, that are recommended, that are spiritual. So that was the point. Mm-hmm. Right? Because they're using it because it's mundane. We're using it but the point is the realization isn't within the mind, because otherwise then what's realizing? It's within the soul. Mm-hmm. Right? Because otherwise the mind will get in the way, unless you see the nature of the soul and the nature of transcendence. So when you worship Krishna, then you're able to make that relationship between you, yourself, and the Lord. And then Krishna reveals himself. But the other, then you're using as your medium the mind, but that's all you have. There is no connection with the Lord. So how will that get you Brahman? They say they're meditating on Brahman, but they're meditating on Brahman as the sky, as the this, as that, you know, that's what they're... So they're still using the mundane concepts. Yeah. So they never get beyond it. So karma, like you said, karma and jnana are impossible. They won't give you the results. Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanande.